Welcome to Running on Ice, the coolest community in freight. I'm your host, Mary O'Connell, bringing you the latest tech updates, warehouse news, and everything happening in the cold chain world. Not only is there the coolest show in freight, but there's also Running on Ice, the newsletter that could not be colder. You can subscribe to that on freightwaves.com/runningonice. Today, we are welcoming back, I'm going to call you the king of containers. The king of containers, Greg Tuthill, the chief commercial officer at C-Cube Containers. Welcome back to the show, Greg.
Thank you, Mary. Thank you for hosting and thank you for having me.
I'm kind of excited about today because we've talked a lot about, you know, reefer and cold storage on the land, but something that you guys specialize in is, you know, the C-Cube containers and all of that. And so I'm excited to get into kind of the growth in those markets and kind of some of the things that are happening on specifically the container side of things. So without further ado, what is kind of driving this huge growth that's happening in the reefer market, and kind of what regions are expected to see a lot of growth? Is it mostly, you know, like the southern U.S. as produce season gets off and going, or is it other parts of the world as well?
Sure. Let me start. I'll give you maybe a 15-second overview of C-Cube, and then I'll go into the growth aspects of the market. So we at C-Cube are one of the largest refrigerated container lessors in the marketplace, and we focus on the cold chain. So this session is certainly appropriate and close to our focus, which I certainly will go ahead and give you some more details around the markets and some of the aspects of what we see. We do have over a million TEUs of assets in our fleet, and we also have invested in approximately about $4 billion in assets. So we're one of the largest in the cold chain, and we certainly are proud of having that niche marketplace. And we'll continue to have that investment thesis as we go forward. Moving to your first question, and although intermodal refrigerated container growth is on the rise, there's a couple factors that also influence growth relative to the transportation mode of container, refrigerated container movements. You know, one is just the general economic conditions, consumer trends, climate change is a big one. And then outsourcing is becoming significant just because of the trend of having healthier diets. So, but most, you know, most importantly, I think what's happening, unfortunately, is there's so much regional pressure on the growers. And that also ties into the inflationary pressures for, you know, the cost challenges that they're having, but also the climate pressure, anything from droughts to flooding to shifting climates. So that's also moving sourcing patterns around to the extent that it's actually increasing growth beyond just consumption growth of factors. So those are different. Those are a few different factors that I think are really the catalyst in what's driving some of the growth that we're seeing today.
That the when you brought up moving things for different climate reasons, that's something I didn't even think about, is, you know, having to maybe shift where I'm growing something as a grower because, you know, due to weather conditions or whatever has happened, or as we've seen a lot in the past few months, a lot of drought conditions. That's something that I didn't even think about, is that, you know, it's not only are we seeing more storms or higher, like I live by the Mississippi and it's really high right now. That's something that I didn't even think about, is, you know, as a potential grower or a farmer, I have to shift where I'm growing things because it could get more easily flooded out, or the soil isn't great anymore. And that's, yeah, that would absolutely impact and create some extra volume.
Yeah, it's becoming more evident, unfortunately, and we see it in the patterns that are taking place in terms of how product is being sourced. You know, if you look at some of the commodities that are being sourced, whether it's citrus, avocados, we're seeing shifting take place. And that's creating other opportunities for other regions. At the same time, it's creating longer transits and sourcing patterns that may be related to further distances. So anytime you have that, you're increasing the volume, but also increasing, you know, some of the velocity that's tied to the growth factors.
Yeah, I think that it's I mean, it's something that we've seen a lot in kind of, you know, how consumers are shifting their preferences. And we've seen frozen food rise like a crazy amount just in the past few years. And it's expected to grow into, I might have this number wrong, but like an $8 billion industry by 2030. And it's something that, like, even just the rise of frozen food is something that that consumers are driving. And then along with the, you know, the ability to have produce around year round, which myself as a consumer, I do quite enjoy being able to access strawberries in the middle of December.
Yeah, I always consider that the year-round seasonal fruit demand cycles, which means that we don't have to wait for summer anymore to go ahead and have blueberries, or we don't have to wait for summer to have strawberries. I mean, that is year-round now sourcing that takes place for having those type of commodities for the entire year, which is certainly a benefit for those who are focused on the gourmet and also healthier diet type food supply businesses. So it's really interesting to see how things are evolving. I think the other phenomena that we're seeing is people are really paying attention to healthier diets, right? And that basically translates into more outsourcing, more imports, and that's also creating a little bit of a spike in demand for certain regions. So it's really interesting. Maybe one other comment or point I'd like to make, and that is within the seafood industry. So the seafood industry now is plagued with the challenge of natural fish stocks being depleted, which is creating an opportunity for fish farming, which is not all bad, but what that means is there's more transport required. So fish farming has created another catalyst for farming of fish to be transported from certain regions that normally would be local. So that's another area that we think is an opportunity that we think will continue to create some growth for the refrigerated container sector.
It's interesting to see how kind of those that are in the fish, I don't want to say fish farming, but kind of like the on the boats going out, getting the wild caught fish. It's interesting to kind of see how that is balanced against the, you know, traditional fish farming. But one of the things that I'm kind of interested in is, so we have all of this growth and all of these different industries that are, you know, using more containers, needing more refrigerated temperature controls. What about those challenges, and what about kind of what problems have come around as a result of this increased growth?
Well, one big challenge, and I think it's pretty obvious, and we're seeing it today, and that is just the navigational constraints within routing and network challenges tied to constraints, choke points, and congestion. So we saw this earlier this year, and even back as far as November when we had the Middle East issues with the Red Sea, navigational diversions of services outside of the Red Sea around the Cape, and that extended transit time. So, you know, that's just one factor. We had the Panama Canal with reduced capacity due to drought restrictions. And so that impacted routing and also impacted the supply chain. We also have weather, and that's tied to my earlier comments related to climate change. So weather is creating additional supply chain constraints. So all of this really kind of translates into the supply chain networks, and not necessarily with the ocean-going sea routes, but when you get into the port-restricted areas, you have a very, very fragile supply chain network that continues to be, I guess, influenced by world events, weather, and other factors. Unfortunately, with the Baltimore Bridge incident, that seems not like a large or significant impact on growth or volume, but it starts to dislocate and displace volume that otherwise would go to Baltimore that now has to be shifted into other East Coast ports. So all of this relates to challenges within not only the maritime commerce industry, but it certainly has an impact on refrigerated commodities being imported or exported. So contingencies need to be built around shipping patterns, and contingency planning is going to be a big, big piece of any shippers, and that is the perishable shippers plan.
That is, I feel like the supply chain as a whole, pretty much since the pandemic, has kind of been like playing catch up. And then it finally gets caught up and everybody's like, okay, we're stable, we're good, we're ready to go, we're back like on like a level playing field. And then all of a sudden, something else happens and it's like, just kidding, it's not. I hope you have a backup plan to your backup plan, because here's just a little chaos for you. And it's something that you're like, oh, sure, like, why would I need to plan for a contingency for something that's happening on literally the other side of the globe? But because it is a global supply chain and everything's connected, you kind of have to have a contingency for if something happens on that side of the world. So it's something that has been very interesting to watch as someone who hasn't had to necessarily work in the day-to-day of coming up with some of those contingency plans, because that's kind of you get to sit back and watch and then kind of ask and say, okay, well, what are people doing? How are people doing this? Versus sitting there going, okay, well, I don't know how I'm going to handle this, but I have to come up with an answer in like 5 minutes because my customer is asking. But that is something that has been definitely interesting to see develop, is that just because, you know, I might focus most of my business here in the US, I'm still affected by something that's going to happen on the other side of the globe. So that's definitely been something interesting. And I think that we'll start to see more and more of that kind of as the rest of 2024 goes on.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, again, I'll say it again, the supply chain's more fragile than I think people realize. And there is a knock-on effect. You know, what happens on one side of the globe can telegraph all the way to the other side and have impacts on delivery, transit times, and then, of course, outcomes in terms of successful shipments. And obviously, there's a lot more sensitivity to the perishable refrigerated container sector than any other sector, just because of the perishable aspect of the cargo. So that's going to take a little bit more planning. It's going to take a little bit more consideration for contingency routing, and also, you know, fail safe or backstop measures that shippers are going to have to go ahead and really consider.
Yeah, it's kind of that you have to have a hope for plan A, but have all the way to like plan Z ready to go just in case you need it. Because honestly, you never know when you might need to just on a random Tuesday go, okay, well, plan A is not working out, so let's go to plan K, because it seems like the next logical option.
Well, I do a lot of plan B execution, but anyway.
So I guess one of the things that has been coming up a lot, and there's been a lot of mixed kind of reporting about it, and that is, you know, shippers and carriers kind of ESG initiatives, and once upon a time there was going to be a regulation for those to disclose scope 1 and 2 emissions, and now it's just kind of like a report which you can. So I guess when it comes to the CO2 emission reductions that everyone's trying to hit, because, you know, selfishly, I'd still like the world to be here. How do you see the entire kind of reefer container industry adapting to these new emissions? Is there a huge industry-wide push to kind of, you know, get on board with everything?
The answer is yes. The focus on just climate change in general is certainly a high priority, and certainly there's been a lot of progress and advancement and, you know, very positive developments in that regard. So as we look at the maritime space, and specifically in the reefer container sector, most of the priority right now is on vessel operations. But what people are starting to realize is the total energy required or energy demand from a operating refrigerated container onboard a vessel takes considerable amount of energy that would be required to be generated that creates emissions. So generally speaking, without getting into a lot of detail or specificity, if you look at an operating vessel that, let's say, carries 10 to 12% reefers, that could take another 20 to 30% of the energy being produced from the vessel to operate the reefers. So what's happening to kind of just allow me to go into the details. Now that is translating into a focus of more efficient operations on the refrigerated container, high efficient compressors, which is actually a real positive in terms of the breakthrough in development and technology with regard to that particular area. And then controllers and technology being much more sophisticated to going forward with making sure that the efficiency and the variable speed compressors tied into, let's say, more efficiency in terms of the operating modes are really starting to pay off in terms of how that's reducing emissions indirectly, but through the vessel operations. And it happens also on land-based modes as well. So there's been a lot of technology advancements. There's been a lot of development on just the components within the refrigerated machine. And I think it's going to continue. I think the recognition of the impact on refrigerated container operations is really starting to resonate and become a priority for key container operators.
So I guess what is there... So there is like the hardware itself is getting improved as the industry kind of says, okay, we need to, like, we're caring about this. This is what we're doing to reduce our carbon emissions. Is there any kind of technology aspect that people are using in addition to the actual improved hardware? Because I feel like both of them together, I feel like can really make a significant difference in kind of that overall carbon reduction.
Yeah. So the hardware components in terms of the development, and the recent technology being applied to, let's say, a compressor with 20 to 30% more efficiency. That's one area that's been really a breakthrough. And so just over the maybe last 3 to 5 years, there's been a lot of advancement with regard to the energy efficiency of the machine tied to the compressor. The other piece that I think is really, really important is refrigerant leak detection, and then technology around the energy requirements, and then also reduction of energy as you cycle through just general refrigeration modes. So, you know, those are a few things, but tied into all of this is the controller component of the refrigerated machine, which means, you know, it's really the brains of the machine that ties into how you go forward with really optimizing the operation of the, you know, the cycling of a refrigerated container. So, you know, without getting too specific with the engineering aspects of it, I think that there has been so many advancements. And this ties back into also telematics, which is obviously the big breakthrough in technology in terms of how to control a refrigerated container remotely, also monitoring the CO2 emissions. Because you'll know about the operating environment. So there are a lot of benefits to really the technology aspect of refrigerated container operations. And I think you're going to see that continue to advance. But the investment is going to be certainly a priority, not only for the suppliers and, you know, the lessors like a C-Cube, but also the operators. I think the operators are going to start to realize that, you know, a little bit more expense with a goal of saving the planet is maybe a worthwhile investment.
I am so impressed by telematics. Like, there are so many things that have come out that, like, the kinds that can say, like, hey, FYI, in about like 3,000 miles, you're going to need to change this oil, or you're going to need to do this. Or even though its normal service is scheduled for a month from now, you probably want to bring it in earlier because of XYZ part is, you know, showing outside its normal operating levels. And I have been so impressed by telematics. And I think that that's kind of a big step forward in saying, okay, well, if I have this refrigerant or if I have this compressor that's, you know, running outside of its normal, whether it's too low and my goods are potentially in danger of being lost or spoiled, or if it's running too high and it's, you know, putting too much carbon emissions, or it's not running at its peak efficiency, then I think, okay, I love that the fact that it's there, that you can just say, okay, I'm gonna pull this one off, go through it, investigate it, before you potentially have loss, or, you know, something gets too cold or whatever. It's kind of that, like, that a first alert of like, hey, you might actually want to check on this real quick, because it could be nothing, but it also could be something that you can just solve. Because also in turn, that creates less waste, which also creates less carbon emissions, because nobody likes waste. And it saves money because nobody likes waste in their supply chain.
Maybe not directly related, but that's why we all should be kind and gentle to the rental cars we rent, because you never know who's watching. You never know what kind of data is being collected. And I say that half jokingly, because telematics is such a powerful new it's not new from the standpoint that it just came out, but you know, the last 5 to 10 years, there's been so much advancement on early warning diagnostics, capturing data that can help with energy efficiency, CO2 emissions that can be translated into, what that means for operators. And then, you know, just to optimize the operation of the machines that are, you know, integrated into the refrigerated container itself. So there's so many benefits that we can, I think, continue to realize, but I think there's going to be, there's going to be additional opportunities in that space as well.
I do think that telematics kind of walks that fine line between being too much information and also kind of that really helpful piece of the pie, because I feel like if you're trying to monitor so many different things that you're just kind of getting that like notification overload where you're like, no, thank you, I'm good. But I do feel like there is that fine line you can walk between knowing exactly what you need to know versus and like not necessarily overwhelming yourself. And I'm excited for kind of the rest of the industry to catch up and say, okay, well, this is how we're going to make our supply chain more efficient and a little more resilient. Because to me, if I can make specifically like in regards to refrigerated containers, if I can make it where they're less likely to break or malfunction or go down, then I know that I'm going to be set and I'm going to have less waste and I'm going to have slightly more resilient supply chain versus, you know, living on the edge and say, it's probably fine.
You're absolutely right. And one thing I think is so important with telematics tied to some of the initiatives we have that are tied to ESG and some other goals and objectives that most corporations have, but also communities have, and that's food waste mitigation. We don't realize what that really means until we start to dive into the data, but technology can assist with that in such an exponential way. And I think that'll continue to be a real big benefit. And of course, there's other benefits, early warning diagnostics, efficiency, emissions, refrigerant leakage, like I said, but, you know, some simple things that we take for granted and, you know, how many loads get to the final destination and have to be discarded. So those are big, you know, benefit areas and advantages of technology advancements in that regard.
Oh man, food waste mitigation, I can talk about for hours, but we do not have that kind of time today. We are actually almost out of time. And since Greg, we already know where you stand on cereal versus soups. This time we're going to need to know your best dad joke.
Okay. Well, keeping within the theme of the ocean and ocean.
I love that you kept it in theme. I absolutely love it.
Thematically, I'm thinking, let me keep this tied into maybe an ocean type of theme here. And here's the joke. Why do seagulls fly over the sea?
Because the ocean, because they're seagulls?
Because if they flew over the bay, we'd have to call them bagels.
Oh. That's pretty good. I like that one. But so then with the bagels, if they flew over the bay and they were bagels, would they eat bagels out of people's hands? Because seagulls are vicious.
True. I don't know. I don't know if they'd eat their own, but maybe that would be something we have to see.
All right. Well, that's fantastic.
Maybe one more because I'm on a roll.
I love it. Hit me with another one.
Why do crabs not share their lobster?
Because something with a pincher, maybe?
Because they're shellfish. You probably quickly recognize my kids don't like my jokes because I have a lot of bad jokes.
I love them. I absolutely love it because it's my very specific brand of humor, and I think that they are amazing. The crab one is number one.
Yes.
It's number one. So if anyone has any great dad jokes or if they have any questions on, you know, the container reefer industry or any way to help reduce CO2 emissions within it, where can they find you outside the show?
You can contact me at gtuthill@ccubecontainers.com. I'll be happy to take any questions, comments, or even engage in any kind of conversation you'd like to have.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Mary.
You can catch other episodes of Running on Ice right here on FreightWaves TV, YouTube, or anywhere you get your podcasts like Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Need more Running on Ice news? No sweat. Subscribe to the newsletter on FreightWaves.com/Running on Ice. See you on the internet.